Hi, everybody. This is Chandler.
And this is Chris.
And bonus guest artist David with you today.
And you're listening to X Reads the podcast. We are so excited to be here for our 74th episode with the incredible guest, David Nakayama.
Hello, David.
Aloha from Hawaii. Thank you for having me.
Oh, gorgeous, gorgeous Hawaii. I'm so jealous. I wish I was there myself.
Which island are you on?
On Oahu, yes.
Cool. Beautiful. Well, yeah, we are so excited to have David Nakayama with us today. David is an incredible artist who has done amazing work over the years. You probably know him for his variant covers on every issue of every comic.
Of everything ever made.
I've been trying to keep busy. It's true.
Yeah, I remember, when you were a guest at Los Angeles Comic Con, and your setup in Artist Alley is magnificent. You know, just the wall of the different covers you have. And every con I go to, WonderCon, San Diego, I just see so many vendors displaying your artwork, and it is a huge draw.
Excellent. Wow, that makes me happy. I never get to walk around shows, so I have no idea what anybody else is doing. That's good to hear.
Well, what's it like, meeting your fans at conventions?
It's still very surreal for me. I feel like things are progressing in a good way. Feel like I'm climbing that mountain, but you know, when I get that kind of fan enthusiasm, I'm almost a little shocked. I'm like, wow, thank you. That's really surprising that you care about it to this degree. So I always try to reward fans for that sort of, excitement about the work. Maybe I'll give a freebie or a sticker, or try to do something unexpected for them.
That's awesome.
That's beautiful. Yeah. I'm personally a huge fan of your work, because I brought over like 20 issues of covers for you to sign, and I cherish them. And I just picked up some more at WonderCon.
Thank you.
Your Cyclops cover on X-Men, and Elsa Bloodstone, I still have for you to sign, and so many more. And in April, you had the covers for X-Men 92 and Red Sonja, and I'm going to be picking up both because I want them.
You rule. Thank you. I appreciate that so much. It's a very special issue for me, because only three times in my career so far have I drawn the entire 92 team. One was for the DVD animated series. One was for the final issue of the original X-Men 92. And then now this is, I think, six years since the last one, with what I wanted to be my best one ever. And I think it is. I think it is for sure my best team shot X-Men ever.
Yes. It's incredible. You know, the one that I really want, it's on my wish list, is the Dazzler and the Emma. I don't have either of those, but I picked up Laura Wolverine. And
thanks.
Yes, I feel like I'm going to have the whole library of Nakayama covers.
Yay. I am on a mission to draw all the great X-Men characters. And you might be happy to learn that we're about to start another round of Hellfire Gala covers, often requested. And we missed the chance to do Colossus and some of the other great male characters last year. So we're going to get to Gambit right away, and maybe some others after that. So stay tuned. More male characters.
Ooh, well, awesome.
Love that. But also, I want to know, where is my Kitty Pryde bleed cover?
Kitty Pryde's just a tricky one, because, you know, when you do a bleed cover, you want to do that evergreen perennial look. And what is that for Kitty Pryde? I mean, like, these days it's the Marauders look, but historically, I'm not sure what it would be. You know, is it just the generic X-Men outfit? That's the problem with her.
I probably would go with puff sleeves. I remember Shadow Cat with the puff sleeves way back in the day.
It's tough. It's not as easy with her as with the other characters. There's sort of a more definitive look for most of the other characters, but that's the main reason we haven't quite, it hasn't felt like a no-brainer the way that other characters have.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fair argument, but yeah, my top Kitty looks would probably be Shadow Cat or the Captain Kate Pryde. The training uniform is just basic, and I'm kind of mad that they had her in it for so long.
Forever.
But, oh, well.
Yeah. I'm hoping, I think we have a plan to do quite a few Hellfire Gala covers. Maybe she has a great look this year that would justify being one of them, but we'll see. I don't know yet.
Yes, we look forward to seeing all those looks. We love the first round. We did a House of X podcast gala episode where we all talked about the looks and everything. And I think my favorite, everybody's favorite, I think, was Emma pretty much. But I also loved Cyclops's kind of Star Wars-esque look. And it was really exciting. So I can't wait to see what you do. Are they going to be like magazine inspired, yes, similar to the Harper's Bazaar? Cool.
Oh, that's what everyone seemed to want. You know, even after we did those, there were requests throughout the year, like, when are you going to do more of those? Are you coming back for Hellfire Gala? And I'm just crossing my fingers, like, I hope there is one and I hope to come back for it. And it looks like yes and yes, coming soon.
Yes.
Yes. You also do all the art on the boxes of Marvel Legends, which I'm avid collector of.
He is obsessed. And right now, David just pointed behind him and we see the Rogue action figure. Oh, such a classic.
Yeah, they're so fun. You guys are going to be stoked. One of the there was just a reveal of a six figure X-Men set or wave, I guess they say. It includes, you know, Wolverine, Sabretooth, but also some real interesting ones like Darwin and Vulcan and lesser produced figures. So that's gonna be exciting, and there's so much more to come. I can't wait to show you or tell you about it, but there's some I've teased elsewhere that one of these upcoming figures is a non-standard body type character in the X universe that people will be very excited for. I think it's the most exciting figure I've worked on in a long time, maybe ever, but we'll see.
Oh my
we'll
God.
See
oh, wow.
It's Glob Herman.
You
I can't
think
wait.
So? It's, you think it's Glob?
I think it's gotta be Glob Herman. Non-standard body type that everybody loves.
Right?
That's where I'm running with that. So one thing that you have been sharing lately is the new figures coming out, Speedball, Madam Hydra, and all these characters, and I'm very, very excited about that. But specifically Speedball, how exciting was it to draw Speedball? I feel like he's such an unsung hero.
Oh, for me, totally. Like I came of age in comics reading things like New Warriors, right? And I've read like 25 issues of that back to back. Started with 13, went back to number one because I loved it, got all of them and continued. And Speedball was my favorite character in the entire thing. With Nova maybe right after that, but you know, Speedball kind of disappeared from comics for a long time and they went in weird directions with him, and to me this was just classic Speedball, like straight out of my memory and how I loved him at that time, and I hope he comes back in that way. That's if I was going to do a modern Speedball, I would just do that, you know, like fun-loving Spider-Man-esque. That's what I would do with him now.
Yeah, I loved old Speedball. The new, like what they did with him, it got kind of dark. I mean, like,
yeah, he took, wasn't he? He became Penance or something.
Well, and he had spikes like in his suit that would like pierce his body, and he was in pain from it. I'm like, oh my God, Speedball was like fine. What happened?
Yeah, it was a decision, but I want regular Speedball back.
Yeah, especially as an artist, I'm sure he's fun to draw because he's always very limmy, like you said, Spider-Man, because he's bouncing around and flailing, and you can kind of put his body into all sorts of interesting shapes.
And I always loved his hair.
Yes, yeah, the hair and the colorful energy effects were always a highlight. I think the challenge with him is like, what can you do with him that's different from Spider-Man? You know, how does he stand alone? So maybe someone needs to crack that before they bring him back.
That's a beard stroker right there. Well, you are here to talk about Generation X number one.
Woo. Yes, I did my homework. I have reread Generation X within the last few hours, and I remember it clearly, and we can talk about it in detail.
I love it.
This came out in November of 1994.
Yeah, and one of the coolest things I remember that spun off from this is the TV show or the movie. Did you happen to catch that movie?
Yeah, I totally did. I remember enjoying it at the time. We were pretty starved for Marvel Comics content on television, so I enjoyed it at the time. I don't think you could, it's not going to hold up now, but it was fun. And I think I particularly remember liking Emma, seeing Emma on screen. Yes. That was the highlight. I barely remember the others.
Shout out to Finola
Hughes. Finola Hughes.
Yes, she played Emma, and yeah. She was a guest on one of our fandom surprises for Comic-Con, and it was amazing.
I remember you posted that. I liked the hell out of it. It was so cool to see her again.
Yeah, she's such a cool person.
Yeah, I rewatched that not too long ago, and it actually was very fun to remember it. I'm sure it doesn't hold up for new viewers, but if you had watched it back in the 90s, it's worth watching, because you were saying we were starved for kind of Marvel content, especially X-Men content, because mm-hmm. it was that, and then in 2000, the X-Men movie, and like nothing other than the animated series. So it was like the closest thing we could get to X-Men content live action, and I ate it up. I loved it. I didn't care that it failed. I watched it so many times.
Yeah, I think I watched it so many times that I thought it was an entire series. It was just one episode I kept rewatching.
I guess it was just a pilot, right? But yeah. They positioned it like a TV movie, and it was fun. Enjoyed it.
Yeah, I loved it. Okay, yeah. So this issue, Generation X, came out in November of 1994.
So the top film at the time was Interview with the Vampire.
Love that movie.
Oh, yes. Do you remember Great this movie, David?
Oh, totally. Love it. It's, who's the actress who plays the little girl? And I forget, she's famous, but...
Kirsten Dunst.
Thank you. I was going to say it famously has, you know, not only Brad Pitt, but also Kirsten Dunst. I think a couple other major notable stars in it, but I love the moodiness and the atmosphere and just the drama of the whole thing. Great movie.
Such a great movie. Great book. Anne Rice, shout out. Love that.
Yes. Well, I also want to give a shout out to Star Trek Generations, because that came in second place.
Yeah.
Wow. It awesome. Deserves a mention.
Yep. Major Trekkie over here. So anything Trek is going to be a thumbs up for me.
Oh, yeah. I just got to know a couple of things about you then, because I'm also a Trekkie. And shout out to our Trekkie listeners. Who are you from the Star Trek universe?
Oh, who am I? Oh, yeah. Boy. I have no idea. I was prepared for favorite captain or best series or any of that, but who am I?
Yeah. Well, you think I'll go. I'm totally Counselor Troy, the empath, you know, and I love wearing blue. So
there it is.
There it is. And I just love, I would totally be cool sitting in the next to the captain's chair, just going like, yeah, that guy feels like he's a weirdo, so don't talk to him. You know, I empath that.
Yeah, I can't answer this question because I've never really seen the show, so I can only tell you like Picard or whatever. Yeah. Like, I have no clue.
Okay, David, who are you?
I think I most identify with guys like Reginald Barclay or Harry Kim. You know, people who are trying really hard to get where they're trying to go, and it's difficult, and it's like what's about their struggle. So I identify with them probably the most.
Cool.
Now, Star Trek Generations, is that what Whoopi Goldberg was in?
It sounds like it would be. I'm trying to remember because there were so many Star Treks. Is this the one where they had multiple casts, like the old cast and the Generation cast?
No, I don't think so. Well, I don't know.
Yeah, it was like a Nexus.
Generations is famous for, you know, the original crew and the Next Generation crew meeting, and then Kirk dies. That's kind of the famous thing about it.
Oh, was that the scene that they made a Christmas ornament out of, Hallmark did, where there's like glass and Spock's on the other side and they're like touching the glass together?
No, you're thinking of one of the earlier movies. Spock dies in the radiation cage, and then one of the new ones, they reverse it, so Kirk dies. But this is the Generations is the one where the two crews, like, they kind of pass the torch to the Next Generation.
Then I definitely did not see this movie.
Well, if you guys like Star Trek Next Generation, the biggest news that came out for First Contact Day was that the Next Generation cast is coming back, and they're going to be on Picard in the next season. So stay tuned, you Trekkies. Now back to the X-Men.
All right, back to November of 1994, the top song, I'll Make Love to You by Boys to Men. This has been like dominating the charts.
Oh my gosh. I feel like, haven't we done this as the top song many a time?
We have. It topped the charts from the end of August until early December.
Wow.
That's a long time for a number one song to just completely dominate.
I'll make love to you like you want me to.
And I'll hold you tight. You know that, David.
I, I completely missed it because my parents raised me in a musical time warp where we only listened to 60s and 70s music during the 80s.
Oh, wow. Well, great tunes.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
All right. Well, what some other cool things that happened in November of 94, the very first PlayStation console was released in Japan.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Now, what's the first game you think of when you think of a PlayStation 1, the PlayStation 1? What's the first game you remember playing on it?
Mine wasn't even on PlayStation. I don't know why, but I'm thinking of Crazy Taxi. And that was like Dreamcast or something. Yeah. It wasn't even PlayStation.
Did you have a PlayStation, David?
I think so. Final Fantasy VII came out for that.
Yes,
right?
Oh my gosh, that's totally it. That's the one I played to death.
Yeah. I think when I was going to college, I got for my room a small television set, a computer, a PS1, and Final Fantasy VII. That's it.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And I played that during college. I remember distinctly. I loved it. I mean, because 94 is when it came out in Japan. It took a while to come to America. And I remember playing Legend of Dragoon and also, Chrono Cross. I played Chrono Cross a lot on PlayStation 1. So I put a lot of hours into that machine.
Yeah, around that time, I was still Nintendo. I didn't know what PlayStation was. Didn't exist to me. I think Sega was still around. Sega.
Yeah, Sega CD, I think, at that time.
Yeah.
I miss Sega entirely somehow.
Another fun fact was that Bill Gates bought Leonardo da Vinci's Codex for $30 million.
Crazy.
$30,800,000 to be exact.
Yeah. Now, Codex is like da Vinci's like notebooks of all of his cool ideas and his inventions, whether fantasy or reality. And could you imagine buying that idea book of da Vinci's?
I can't. I don't know what over 30 million is. This I is can't like, math that in my head.
How is this not in a museum? I love how Bill Gates is like, it mine.
Yeah, I know. Like, I'll take that. Thanks.
Yeah, I'll buy that.
The first trains for public run under the English Channel connecting England and France came out.
Yes, I know. That was probably pretty monumental because they had to use planes or boats. And I've been on the train underneath the English Channel from London to Paris. And it's, you know, it's very, very useful.
Yeah. And lastly, this last fact is very near and dear to my heart. Why? Because I love musical theater. And in 1994, the musical Sunset Boulevard debuts by Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Awesome.
Have you ever seen this musical?
I haven't seen that particular one, but I'm a giant musical fan also. I've seen some other ones. We don't get as many here in Hawaii, but Phantom came about that time for me, and I definitely saw it twice.
Yes.
Yeah, I saw Phantom. I think was maybe one of the first musicals I saw as a kid because my parents brought me to the musical, to the theater, sorry, at that time. And I'll never forget the chandelier.
Yes, the chandelier falling. I was a little kid when I saw it. I was like, it's gonna fall.
I know, I was terrified. I was terrified of that chandelier. I was like, oh my god. I didn't quite understand.
It kind of feels like anytime there's a chandelier in any media at all, you know, stage play, movie, video game, the whole point of it is to fall at some point.
I know. It's the Chekhov gun, as they say. If it's there, it's going to fire.
It's some random trivia about me. Back in the day when I used to take vocal lessons, my vocal coach was in Phantom of the Opera on Broadway as Miss Carlotta.
Oh, wow. Amazing.
So let's get into it. Generation X, number one, published November 1994, created by Scott Lobdell and Chris Bachalo.
Titled Third Genesis, which is a play on Second Genesis, which dates back to Giant Size X-Men number one. So they leaned into this. They're like, this is the third, they thought this was going to be on the level of Giant Size X-Men.
Like, yeah. When I got to that part, I was kind of trying to remember, had they kind of built up the team prior to this issue coming out? You know, like, had they explained somewhere else that, okay, Sean and Emma are going to run this team and it's going to be a big deal and get ready for it. Is that what happened in Fatal Attraction?
Yeah, okay. Essentially, we just covered the Phalanx Covenant not too long ago, and that's the lead-in. It's the four issues ramp up, introducing these characters for their first appearances in the main X titles, and then launching into Generation X. But not only were they in the four issues, there were ads everywhere. I feel like they couldn't have advertised this series more. They really bet it all. They're like, they were all in on Generation X, and I feel so bad for them because it did not sail off as well as they had hoped. I mean, well, it doesn't because the thing about Generation X is that's near and dear to people of our age range. But if you talk to anybody that's either older or younger, they're like, oh, I've heard of it. Oh yeah, isn't Monet on that? Like, they know Monet maybe, and they recognize Jubilee in the lineup, but it did not land as well as New Mutants, for instance, or anything like that.
Yeah, that's true. It doesn't have the staying power. I think that name is perhaps a problem. It's, you know, sort of dated just on the face of it. New Mutants is perhaps a little more timeless. They can keep bringing that one back. But for me, I'm going to just say right now, I think the issue is really good. I like the creators. It's a really solid, strong first issue. The characters are really good. And I'm mystified that many of them aren't bigger in the X-Men universe now.
I 100% agree. 100%. All right, let's get into it. We're going to go to the cover.
Oh, yes. And on the cover,
it's gorgeous.
It's chromium.
Yes, it's those chrome covers. I mean,
yeah, this is the thing I saw on the shelf in the liquor store. And I say that one because it's shiny.
It's not just a foil cover. It is a full chrome cover.
Mm-hmm. Did this cost more money because of the cover?
It did, yeah.
Definitely. At least an extra dollar.
Yeah. I don't remember the price at the time. There it is. It cost $3.95. Normally, ooh, comics were $1.95 in this era. So $2 extra just to get this issue. Anyways, it's on the cover. It also says an X-Men event.
Yeah. Oh, like, this I don't is remember is an event. Yes.
I don't remember comics having this kind of like steal a stamp of approval of like, this is an X-Men event. It's happening.
I think they did that on things like X-Men Alpha and Omega and stuff, you know, as well.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, big crossovers. Talk about chrome covers, X-Men, Omega and Alpha. Yeah. But yeah, I don't think I remember seeing an X-Men event on things unless it was a big crossover. So this was like the launch title. They were totally leaning into it. Let's open the page. And what do we see? We see it's Dawn. And Paige Guthrie is going for a jog in the woods. It's actually a great intro. Do you want to read it, Chris, or do you want me to?
I am getting there. Let's go and have you do it.
Okay. It says, Dawn, nature's way of saying, here you go, take another shot. Try again. Here's a whole new day in which to succeed, to give reality the dreams you had the night before. And then it goes into, this is Paige Guthrie, little time for sleep or dreams. She is a mutant. Nature's way of saying, here you go, a little something extra. Try harder. You've been given genetically altered abilities which separate you from the rest of the human race. Deal with it. Very 90s. Like,
oh, yeah. And you know, do you ever work out with hand weights like that when you go running?
No, I forgot about those hand weights.
It feels like a 90s thing to do, like late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, or like the sand weighted.
Oh yes, you put them around your legs.
Your ankles. Yes.
Oh yeah, my mom had some.
Yeah.
So I would just try them on and run around the house, imitating her. Yeah. Good times.
Yeah. Then she's going for a jog. She's running up to the mansion and she encounters Jubilee.
Oh my gosh. And Jubilee is just, she's tired, y'all. She just got out of bed.
Yeah.
She looks like she's wearing her nightgown. It's pink polka dot.
Yes.
Or black polka dots on a pink dress. And the cutest dinosaur monster slippers.
Yes.
The kind that when you walk around, it probably goes, wah, wah, yeah, wah. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. And her signature yellow jacket, of course, because who would Jubilee be without her yellow jacket on?
Oh, yeah.
Now, what material do you think this jacket is? Is it like a raincoat? Is it like
it's a raincoat?
It's a raincoat.
No, I don't know that for sure. David, what do you think?
I've always drawn it like it's vinyl, so kind of in the raincoat family. Yeah,
I guess. Okay, I was just thinking, like, it must be really warm, but maybe because they're in like the northeast, you know, coast, it's not hot. But like wearing a vinyl coat around all the time would make me feel very warm. But who knows? Maybe she's just a cold person. She just needs to stay warm. But yeah, she's got great dialogue. Do you want to do this?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Do you have any idea what time it is?
I'd guess about 6:45.
Oh, wrongo. It's almost 10 of 7. Nobody but psychopaths and garbage men get up this early. And none of them would be crazy enough to jog to boot.
David, what do you think about these kind of first images? I mean, Chris Bachalo's art is
I love it. As soon as I started reading it, it reminded me of how X-Men comics used to be, even in the Claremont era, which is to say they're jaunty and fun, and you know, there's a lot of dialogue, and it's all very, you know, whimsical and light. And I feel like, looking back, you know, Scott Lobdell did a good job continuing that trend from Claremont. They're very, very similar. One flows from the other. And if you compare it to the way X-Men is now, they are nothing alike, nothing at all. X-Men is very serious and not the least bit jaunty anymore. If anything, the dialogue is very spare these days. So the style has changed a lot. I don't dislike the modern style, but it has sure changed a lot.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. What about Chris Bachalo's art?
Oh, wow. Okay, so this is the big revelation for me. When I was reading, I'm like, wow, this is fantastic. This is peak best Chris Bachalo art I think I'm aware of. You know, I think I might have picked up the book because I had recently read Death, you know, with Neil Gaiman over at DC.
Yeah.
And loved that art. I possibly had even bought that for the art. And then I followed him over to Generation X, and sure enough, the art was fantastic. And I would also group, you know, Ghost Rider 2099 in with that era of his art. I don't think he's ever been better for me. It's clear and it's easy to read and it's very expressive and it's just the right amount of weird. So I don't know. It's just basically perfect for me on the art side.
I agree. This whole issue, it is peak Bachalo. Sorry, I've been saying it wrong. Because he is known for kind of more of a messy style at times, or chunky style, or whatever you want to call it. I love his style no matter what it's described as, but I feel like this is a little bit more of a hybrid or toned down version of what he's known for, but I really, really appreciate it. And these, especially the splash images, as we see of each kid gets like an awesome splash kind of image. And those are seared into my mind. Just totally. Completely seared into my mind. Like once we get up to Monet and Everett and everybody. All right, mm-hmm. Continuing on.
Oh, so, you know, Jubilee has a funny line here and she's all like, quit the healthy self-image there, Hayseed. I wouldn't care at all if you weren't blasting your Cindy Crawford workout video at 5 a.m. in the morning. You people down south aren't real big on sleep, are ya? So, you know, Cindy Crawford, we have a lot of younger viewers or listeners, I've learned recently.
Yeah.
You know, so sometimes they don't understand the references. So, David, can you explain to us who Cindy Crawford is?
The quintessential 90s supermodel, right? Like she starred in a famous Pepsi commercial, if I remember correctly.
Oh, yeah.
Something like that. She was like, you know, the face of supermodel at that time.
I think in the Claremont era, there was a line similar to this and they used Jane Fonda.
Probably.
You know, like you and your Jane Fonda workout video.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah, this is the updated version.
Sounds right.
Cindy Crawford of the 90s.
All right. No, we got to do this scene between Paige and Jubilee. Now where Paige says, nah, if you'll excuse me.
No.
I have to get ready for my class.
You're not excused.
I'll only be a second.
At least let me turn around.
You're being silly.
And you're being gross.
And she rips off her skin. Ew.
I am with Jubilee. I'm so grossed out. I'm just like, please don't do this in front of me. I can't.
Because Jubilee goes, I hate when you do that.
I love this power. I think it's so visually interesting. And it reminds me that they had a thing for body horror mutant powers, like in this series and at the time. There's at least three people on the team whose powers are straight up body horror. And I this is one of those characters, when I said before, like I suspected that they would go on to bigger things. This is one of those characters that I thought would be huge in the X-Men. You know, you hardly ever see Husk anymore, but I always thought she was so interesting and could use a lot more of her.
Yeah, for sure. Because the limitless potential of her power is fascinating for any writer.
Yes.
You can write her onto any team and she could be a number of things. And so, yeah, it's fascinating how they kind of, yeah, wrote her out of existence. I mean, she's around, but not really around. Jubilee is, she stands the test of time. She's still here.
Yep, that's right. And she likes to say things like, well, some of us need more training than others. When I was with the X-Men.
Please, Lee, not another "when I was with the X-Men" parable.
Okay. I feel like I'm at the age now where I could look back and say, back in my day. You know, like with cosplay, because like back in my day when I started cosplaying, there wasn't the social media around.
Yes.
You just put on a costume and had a blog and talked about it.
Yes.
Chandler, do you have any?
Oh my gosh. No, I don't know if I really do much. Like, well, back in the though, I mean, I do say a lot of Comic-Con. Back Comic-Con when it wasn't so crazy. Oh,
back before Twilight.
Yes. I definitely do that.
What about you, David? Do you have any back in my days?
Totally. You know, when I was first starting to try to get work in the comics industry, you didn't get work by doing it over the internet. You had to physically take samples to comic conventions and pray to get 10 minutes of FaceTime with an editor. It's weird for me to explain that to people now, but that's how you did it. Now it's completely different.
Yeah, it seems like, yeah, artists especially, they have an Instagram profile and then they get hit up by somebody out of the blue and they're like, hey, love your stuff. Wanna come talk to us?
That's it. That's all you got to do. Just be awesome and be on the internet.
Amazing. But so to continue this conversation that Jubilee and Husk are having, I love Jubilee's next line.
All I was going to say is that we would never, ever leave our skins lying around. Y'all could at least pick up after yourself, hey, Seed. That is like tacky cubed.
I love how she's just like the idea of just like we walk around campus and there's just a corpse of skin.
It's so tacky.
So gross.
It's like, at least like pick it up and like put it in the garbage bin. Come on.
I wonder what she does with all of them. You know, like in the Prime Ultraverse comic, like it just, they wrote it in so it just dissolves. But what happens to as normal, or what happens? I don't know if they ever went into that.
Yeah, I don't know what happens to her sheddings.
I mean, could you like, oh, this is gross, but like make a lampshade out of it, or like, I thought I saw like an American Horror Story with, yes, Zachary Quinto, who
Ed
did that.
Ed Gein did that.
Oh, ew.
Ew.
Yeah.
Anyways, up from above, they hear, you can't fault the child for poor upbringing, Jubilation. Certainly after a few weeks of exposure to you, Paige will be the portrait of class. And then we see the gorgeous Monet. She's flying in from the sky. She's got that classic spread arm pose.
Oh, and a big chunky blue sweater.
I love the training uniforms with the dance wear over it, as I say. You know, it's just like, I love, because I feel like the X-Men never really did that except for the jackets that they would sometimes put over.
Right. Yeah,
but I like the casual wear that they wear over their uniforms, like Jubilee's jacket and everything. What's something that you would love to draw on top of a training uniform? Leg warmers? No, not the era.
I don't know if it gets much better than jacket. Jacket is, you know, I guess Jim Lee sort of figured it out. He had jackets for Rogue and Cyclops and probably others along the way, and it just works. It just It brings the superhero down to some casual level that seems more human and relatable. I don't know if there's anything better.
Males in yoga pants and big, giant, chunky sweaters.
There we go.
So Colossus. How about that?
Colossus in yoga pants and a chunky sweater?
Yeah. are, you know, leg warmers for the girls. They need to come back.
Yeah. I love leg warmers. Yeah.
Yeah.
Off the shoulder sweatshirts. Love that.
Oh my gosh. Aren't the scrunchies back?
Scrunchies are back.
The scrunchies are back, you guys.
Okay. Making notes.
By making notes, no, ladies and gentlemen, David's just like, ignore.
So, but like, we'll wake up like in a month and all of a sudden there's a trend on the internet. Like everybody, all the women are wearing leg warmers again.
Mm-hmm. And we'll be like, see, we told you.
We knew it. We called it.
Okay, anyways. So yes, Monet, she flies in from the sky. Jubilee's like, hello, you cannot be flying around on campus. And Monet does not care. She's like, unlike you who might be hiding that you're a mutant, she's like, I am not afraid.
Is she snobby?
She's very snobby.
Yeah,
super. She arrives here fully formed, you know, with a very memorable and different attitude than everybody else. And I think that might be why she has kind of maintained a spot in the comics all along since.
Yeah, I always desire her and Emma Frost to have scenes together. Why they don't let them go toe-to-toe on a snob waspy level. Like, maybe it's just because the writers are like, I didn't grow up in a snob society, so I don't know. But like, I feel like the potential of an Emma Frost and Monet like snob down is just too good to pass up. And why don't we have it? Or at least let them go shopping. Let them like one up each other, like on a shopping level and being like, oh, I'm going to, you know, Harrah's, or I'm going to go over here. Like I'm going to this.
Emma would always win. Because she would be one step ahead.
They're both telepathic and also like they're both mega rich. Mm. I don't know, you know.
Well, I guess they would block each other's mind, like intrusive mind thoughts.
But I just feel like I feel like there's a lot of ripe potential there. But yeah, she comes fully formed, like you said, and she comes with three semis full of stuff. Yeah, okay. Because we see Banshee greets them at the entrance.
Sean Cassidy himself. And I love his outfit. Because if you, as we were talking about Trekkies earlier, love Star Trek The Next Generation, this is totally reminiscent of an engineering outfit from TNG.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You know, all you got to do is replace that little X symbol with the Star Trek intercom.
Yeah.
Boom. There you go.
It's beautiful. It's something that I wish existed. Actually, kind of does exist. I feel like I've seen this X-Men kind of track jacket look somewhere for sale, but I love it. I love it so much. But yeah, Banshee's there to welcome in. I guess it's like first day of class, I guess, where people are just moving in. And so Monet is like, oh, Mr. Cassidy, could you please help me bring a few items? I brought a few things brought home, you know, to bring to the dorms. And he's like, sure, I'll take care of it myself. And then, surprise, surprise, three semis pull up. Hey, buddy pal, where you wants we put the stuff?
And he actually says, nope. Don't. Like Homer Simpson.
It's of the time. Yes.
Cheese and crackers, and what'd you pack your whole life in there?
Ooh, elsewhere.
Now we're on a bus?
What's that, David?
Well, I was going to add that this bit reminded me about Banshee, really. Like there's never been another comic that I read where Banshee was like the main character, and he's a major, you know, force here, and not really before and not ever since. So this was peak Banshee, I think, for me.
It was peak Banshee, and also the lead in the Phalanx Covenant that we covered. It was peak Banshee then because they were setting him up for this role. And he was so stunning in that four issue series, and then leading him into this ongoing run. I totally agree. And it's never been the same. Like,
no.
He's just been a really small bit player, I feel.
Yep.
So elsewhere, we are on an airplane.
Yeah, it's on the Mid-Atlantic Red Eye between the United Kingdom and the United States.
And there is a private young man who finds himself performing for a curious audience of one. So basically we see Chamber, and he's staring at a young girl, or a young girl staring at him more so. Because she's very curious. He's all bundled up. You know, Chamber, for audience might not know, you know, he basically has crazy wild bedhead, a mask, very appropriate of our era of COVID. Yeah. He's got a mask that comes up all the way up to his nose, and then he's all bandaged up with a big trench coat on him.
Yeah, and so like he sees a little girl looking over, so he's like, oh yeah, well, I'm gonna give her a peek to see, show her something. So he pulls the mask down a little bit, and what happens?
Well, we see that there's a little bit of a nexus of energy. There's a blue spark.
And then she's all like, Mom, that guy has some kind of bionuclear psionic biokinetic field inside him.
Love the line. So fun.
And then the mom says,
that's his business, Dina. Now turn around and finish your calculus. I just love how, you know, in the narration of over-explaining powers that they often do in this era, I love how they give it to, rather than a narrative box, they give it to a girl, a young girl.
So great.
So awesome.
Yeah.
So something that I really love is, you know, he has his Hogwarts letter, mm-hmm. which is basically the letter saying, hey, you're accepted to Charles Xavier School for Gifted Youngsters. So the letter actually reads, dear Mr. Starsmore, after a careful review of your case history as provided by the physician assigned to evaluate your condition, I feel comfortable encouraging you to consider enrollment at our
establishment.
So that's the, if you're a mutant, that's your Hogwarts letter to Xavier Institute.
You're a mutant, Harry.
Anyway. I didn't, you're right, you're absolutely right, that is so Hogwarts.
Man, Chamber was so cool. I mean, we'll get into Chamber later, but
I'm holding just... my tongue.
I know. Okay, we'll get to it. Yeah. Okay, someplace else, we see Sync charging towards camera. Like, he is giving us amazing bodies.
Oh, yeah. And this is a jungle scene. Lots of palm trees. I'm thinking, like, what is this, the Savage Land?
This is also the first time we see the full Generation X uniform on page. We've seen the bits on Monet and everything, but this is like the first time we see the full red outfit with the blue X and the yellow boots and gloves and everything. It's the biosphere, by the way, or the biodome. It's not the Savage Land.
I know, but that was a reveal.
Oh.
That I was going to reveal on the next pages.
Maybe they're in the Savage Land. Yeah,
it looks like the Savage Land, you guys.
So yeah, we know that Sync is looking for somebody. He's battling or kind of sparring off with somebody. We don't know who yet.
Oh, but then he finds a belt buckle inside of the river.
Ooh, and he reaches down. He says, Angelo's belt? How to get in the stream?
Yeah, but guess what? This is all a trap.
Mm-hmm.
And do you remember, David, what happens next?
He gets jumped by Skin, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Skin is hiding, crouching underneath a bush, and he uses his stretchy fingers to tie up Sync's legs, and he slams them into the ground with a wham. And then we get our Skin splash, which is also incredible. And he's posing for camera with his big long fingers and his stretchy gray skin.
I'm kind of curious, David. Have you ever drawn Skin before?
Never. In fact, I don't think I've drawn any of the Generation X characters except Jubilee.
Ah, so
this makes me sad because you might just be fibbing or you might be telling the truth, but what it tells me is that none of the upcoming Hasbro Marvel Legends are Generation X characters, and therefore I'm sad.
Oh my gosh, did you Sherlock Holmes that out? That factoid.
Well, he said that there's really cool ones coming up and he can't talk about them. And then he just confessed he never drew a Generation X character. So therefore, he never drew them for a toy.
But I really like the Generation X characters, all of them. I think they're all very interesting. I think they've been underserved. Chamber's my favorite. I'm holding my tongue until we get to the big Chamber page. But this guy had potential too.
Mm. Yeah, so they get into it. They get into a huge fight. And guess what? Sync, you know, Skin's all like, please get off of me. Because you don't want to sync with me because I can't even control my powers fully. Like, if you get my powers, it's going to be bad. So, like, get off me. But Sync is just like, no way. No, we're sparring. I'm going after you. And there's a lot of, like, rainbow action going on.
Yeah, that's a Sync power in effect. And then he and Sync gets stretchy. And they both get stretchy fingers. And then it's finger on finger as they're trying to, whatever, entangle each other. And now they just basically become a big pretzel. What do you think about these kind of splash pages of Sync and Skin?
Is that for me?
What do you think of their fight?
You called it before. There's a big splash page kind of all the time. And that is my jam. Like, that is how I approach comics. I haven't drawn interior comics in a long time, but that is specifically what I tried to do. You know, I would tell the story quickly in the other panels and then save some space to have a gigantic artistic, you know, boom anytime there was something important. And that would be, you know, 80% of the pages, you can get it to do that. You know, there's some pages are just not meant for that, but 80% of the rest, you absolutely can. And I feel like that's very 90s and it's very much at play here. And he does it great.
I got to give a shout out to the letterer. Can we look at his name? I forgot.
The letter, it's by a company called Starkings and Comic Craft.
Oh, it's a company. All right.
Yeah, by this time, Richard Starkings had basically taken over all lettering in comics, I think, with Comic Craft.
Yeah, and now it's all virtual calligraphy or whatever VC is.
Well, they're a competitor. They came along later, as far as I understand. But like, definitely at this time, you saw Liquid taking over the coloring. And, you know, Richard Starkings Comic Craft taking over the lettering, and they do the best work. I don't know exactly what all he's doing now, or if, it, you know, other people kind of figured out cheaper, less artistic ways of doing things, but nobody does it up like Richard Starkings.
Yes. And I mentioned the lettering specifically because Jubilee and her words get very colorful and they match. They just match her. And I just feel her essence in the lettering. Mm-hmm. First, we have Sean Cassidy explaining that this isn't the Savage Land.
No, you're looking at the world's first and no doubt only fully interactive ecological biosphere.
To which Jubilee replies, are you serious, Cassidy? A danger grotto? You want us to rain in a terrarium?
No, I know. It's so good. That's why, you know, I think that's part of why this issue is so good is because they letter Jubilee especially just perfectly. It's so good.
I just feel her energy just pop off the page in those words.
Yeah, well, and even in the bubble where it says, are you serious, Cassidy? It has like a wiggly line connecting it. It's not just like a bubble with like a little dash saying, this is who's talking. It's like, you could tell that she's milking this word.
Oh, yeah. Serious?
And Paige is upset because she studied the danger room. She studied holographic combat. She wanted to be number one in class, but now she's got to deal with this new biosphere. And then suddenly, crash.
Oh no! Guess who comes crashing through that window? It is Sync and Skin.
Yes, all entangled. And they're like, now let go of me.
I will as soon as you let go of me.
After you.
On three.
Si. Uno.
Dos.
Oh, that'll be more than enough of that, lads.
Banshee stops them.
Yes, he separates them. And then all of a sudden, of course, we get our very first shot of Emma Frost.
Our white queen herself.
She enters.
Finally.
Yes. You know, she doesn't appear in this issue enough.
It's weird. I had that same takeaway. I was like, oh, cool. This is that book where Emma Frost and Banshee are leading some young mutants and she's barely in it. She hardly says two word bubbles. She doesn't have a big splash page. It must happen elsewhere, but it definitely doesn't happen here.
Yeah, I know. But she's here now.
Yeah,
we love to have her. I love how she has a riding crop.
Yeah, and she is at the dominatrix bodice, but covered with a blazer.
Yes.
What do you think of this look, David?
I really like it. It proves that she doesn't have to show a lot of skin in order to look like herself or look sexy or whatever you want to call it. You can clearly tell this Emma Frost at a glance. It works perfectly for me.
Yeah, I think it works because, you know, she's teaching children. She's not on an adult combat team. She's a headmistress teaching. So I think this is right. A great outfit for her.
And I would add to that thought that Emma Frost teaching is the best. I miss that. You know, she had that bad situation with the Hellions and then came back to do it here and has since sort of refused to start that up again. And I don't know, I'd let her do it. I think she's at her best when she's sort of trying to keep herself in check a little bit, you know, and then sometimes it creeps out and, you know, anyway, I just think in this context, she shines very well.
I agree. Yeah. It gives her a great dynamic because you think of her as conniving, like doing whatever she wants to get, you know, her.
But she does, even in this next panel.
Well, yes, she does whatever she wants, but when she's teaching or when she has a class, she second guesses or she makes different choices due to her environment. And you've seen her go the more empathetic or more motherly route because of this kind of leadership role she's in.
Yeah, she's maternal.
Very.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, Sean Cassidy was just like, I thought we were going to let them, you know, do individual power exercises and stuff. And she's all like, you decided, Mr. Cassidy. I only acquiesced to be polite as head administrator here at Xavier's. I feel I have some say in how we train these young adults who know more about their powers than you seem willing to give them credit for.
Mm-hmm. And then they start sparring. And yeah, I love Monet. She's like, are they like this all the time?
But somebody pops in.
Ooh.
They teleport in, actually.
Yeah, we see Gateway over the corner of Jubilee's shoulder.
Yeah, what can you tell us about Gateway? What is your memories of Gateway, David?
Gateway is such a weird character. Like, he hardly ever talks. There's a moment I know in here where he does, but it's really hard to get a handle on it because he doesn't talk. You can't really get a sense of what he does. He's kind of just seems like a plot device sometimes. So I don't know. Don't have a lot of love for Gateway, but and I can imagine if someone was reading this cover or this comic for the first time, they'd be like, "What the hell? Who is this? Where'd he come from?" It's just one of those moments where you would have had to understand the past continuity to even have any idea what's going on.
Yeah, I always think at this moment I didn't know who Gateway was, but now that I've read a lot of X-Men and now I'm coming back to this years later, Jubilee's relationship with Gateway is interesting from the Outback X-Men days. And of course, mm-hmm. he is the whole reason why she's on the team is because she jumped through his portal after the ladies in the mall.
Oh, wait, yeah, right.
Yeah, so she has had she has had some a whole history. Life with Gateway in Australia. And, it's fascinating to think of that they have this history that they don't really get into, but it's like when you know it, you kind of have a bit of a deeper kind of connection to how she might react to seeing him because of just their history together.
That's cool. So I haven't read them all. So I'm not, for me, he's never said anything or really done anything except be a portal to somewhere.
And
so,
that's basically, it's not like they shared heartfelt conversations, but he's been a role in her life.
I see.
Yeah, anyways.
I just love in the background with Sean and Emma, the Generation X kids, they don't care anymore. They're just like moving on. And in the background, the adults are fighting, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, with like Charlie Brown,
Wiggly Mark. Yeah, great.
So now we go to the Logan International Airport in Boston, Massachusetts.
Ooh, look at this car.
Oh, that's a cool car. It looks very mafioso. Like if that pulls up beside you, there's going to be mob guys that pop out, grab you and drag you in and sit you in that car. That's what it looks like to me.
Give you the cement shoes and throw you in the river. Anyways, we see that they're parked outside the airport because they are waiting for the fleshy human thing called Jonathan Starsmore. We just saw him on the plane.
Oh, yeah.
That's so. They're waiting for him.
Dina, mind your own business.
Yes, but we see M-Plate, our villain. I don't even know if we get his name yet. Sorry. But his name is M-Plate, and yep. He is in the back of the car, and he is waiting for Jonathan Starsmore to feed on him.
Yeah, but who's his goon? Like, he's in this scene, right? But then, like, right. He disappears? Like, he doesn't have him anymore?
Yeah, well, because he doesn't have the same powers as him to go between the dimensions so he can be unseen. But DOA... he's in the series ongoing with M-Plate, but he doesn't really get a good setup here.
Mm.
So we go back to the school and we see that Jubilee and Everett are waiting to be picked up by Banshee to go to the airport to meet Jonathan Starsmore.
Yeah, Monet's climbing up in the trees.
Yes, they I love this image of Monet up in the trees. And what it gives us is a little prelude to what's going to happen with her, what her true kind of identity is. Chris doesn't know. I don't want to spoil him. And I've been avoiding this.
There's because a thing that I don't know.
There's a major thing with Monet and I don't like it, but I don't want to spoil it. But yes, it alludes to a little bit about what her true character is of being playful in the trees. David, do you know what I'm talking about?
Kind of. Okay. I know... you know, at the final page of this issue, I know there's some connection with her, and I was going to ask you guys a little bit about that, but I know there's a lot more that's going to be revealed about her.
Yes. Just know that Monet is not quite what she seems, and what we get in this...
she's not a phalanx, is she?
No. For those in the know...
that didn't carry over?
For those in the know, well, be like, oh, they were setting it up in issue one, by kind of giving her this like scene and everything. And I didn't realize it at the time reading it in 94, but now that I've gone back, I'm like, oh, I see. They had this planned. Interesting. Okay.
Cool.
Because to me, it came out of nowhere when it happens in the issue. I'm so sorry to be vague, but I feel like this is something that I don't want to like, Chris always
don't ruin it
burying the lead, and this is like 30 issues from now, so that's why I'm like,
oh my gosh, I'm gonna have to speed read and catch up because now I have a thing I gotta know.
All right, moving on. So yes,
I love these Jubilee lines, okay, because like, you know, Sean Cassidy says in his car,
no, I want to go one page before because it's my favorite.
Okay.
So go, what does Jubilee say right here?
So, you know, Monet's climbing in the trees and Jubilee looks up and says, climbing trees, isn't that like totally second grade?
And then Monet says, as the authority of all things immature, Jubilee, I'll have to take your word for it. And then Jubilee says,
how come she always gets the last digs?
So good.
It's good dialogue. I still think this dialogue holds up. It's fun. It's jaunty in a way that we just don't really see anymore.
I totally agree.
So Sean Cassidy is in his, what kind of car is this?
Well, it's a convertible. It looks like maybe a Ford Mustang, maybe.
Do you like drawing cars?
No, I don't. I sure don't. I find them quite difficult. Any hard surface, machined, engineered thing is among the hardest things there are to draw. I'm pretty comfortable when it comes to people and less so when it comes to machines, but every artist has their weak spots and their strong suits.
Mm-hmm. And so Sean says,
child, I may be a tad overprotective about the lottie.
No.
Oh, will you be joining us?
Yeah,
okay. Sorry.
So Sean says,
will you be joining us?
And you know, Monet is just like, no, I'm just going to stay here and figure out the campus and familiarize myself. But then Jubilee says, me? I think she has to go unpack her butler. And don't forget to put the caviar and fish eggs into the fridge before they melt. And
then the car zooms away.
Hey, what you doing?
He says, sorry, lass, now buckle up.
So now they're gone. Goodbye, Jubilee. Goodbye, Sean.
It's so good. I just love it. She's like, you did it on purpose. And he's like,
never. Now buckle up.
You did it to buckle. I'm buckling.
I'm buckling.
And then Monet's laughing in the background.
Yeah.
So good.
But now Monet has a little bit of a shock because she sees
Gateway. But yeah, she's shocked to see him. But what she starts talking about him as a mentor, and that made me realize I don't know everything about Monet because I don't remember Gateway being a mentor to Monet. But she's like very happy to see him at first because, you know, it's a mentor. Oh my gosh, you're here. But I'm totally fine. You know, we just started the classes, you know. And then she's like, wait, this isn't about me. It's him. He's returned, hasn't he? And she looks terrified.
Yeah, and he's looking down because, you know, that's totally the truth.
Mm-hmm. And then we go back to the airport.
Ah, humanity. What a pathetic waste of genetic resources. Okay, so wait, explain this to me. This guy is, he goes through dimensions and people can't see him, so yes. He's invisible?
Correct. So he, So, you know, how we have the multiverse or whatever. So he is in a different universe, like a fold between the two. So he can see the current reality, but he is in a different one transversing so that nobody can see him, but he knows who he's looking for.
Yeah. Something I love about crowd scenes with different particular artists is they really go into detail on each of these extras. They look like they have their own backstory.
Mm-hmm. Like the bowl cut kid.
Oh yeah. He's got a story.
He's really mad at his mom.
Yeah, and the Fonz looking guy with the cigarette and the, you know, the 60s doo-wop hair, I would say. David, what do you think about background characters and drawing them?
I haven't had to worry about them in many years because I've been specializing in covers, but it's one of the hardest things, you know, when you're drawing interior comics to populate the rest of the world around the figures. You know, it's very tempting to do full pages where it's just talking heads and literally nothing else behind them. That's like the bare bones. You can tell the story with it. But if you compare that with what Chris Bacalo is doing here, it's just unbelievable. It feels like he's not skimped on any panel in the entire comic. You know, any chance there was to detail out the background, he did. He invented effects I don't think I've ever seen before, like this business where end plate is, you know, out of sync with this dimension, the way he stretched things there and the way it sort of breaks into little parallel lines. That's so cool. It's amazing. This is a no skimp issue on his part.
It's incredible. It's amazing. So M-Plate, he's going through the airport. He's looking for Chamber, Jonathan Starsmore, because he wants to feed on his mutagenic marrow or material in his body. And he sees just the light glimmer of some mutant activity going on in an old man, and he says, the old thing, he possesses a long faded trace of mutant ability about him. Of course I'm looking for something fresher, juicier, tastier.
And several feet but a world away.
Yeah, we see Banshee, Jubilee, and Sync waiting for Jonathan to come off the plane. This is in the era where you could just go to the gate. I mean, remember when you didn't have to go to like pick up or like baggage claim? You could just go right up to the gate and wait for somebody to come off the plane. Like,
that's right.
When I saw this, I was like, oh my God, I forgot that was a thing.
They'd have to write that differently these days.
So different. Yeah.
I noticed a tiny Easter egg. There's a sign way back there that says, you're lost. Like, maybe that's where the lost and found is.
Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. But then, you know, it's kind of like an allusion to the fact that they're lost and looking for something.
Or you're about to lose because who's going to pop out?
Yeah.
way too much for just you guys. So, yeah, they inquire about the flight. It has just arrived. It's deboarding. And they are waiting. And so is M-Plate. M-Plate is also there right next to them waiting for Chamber. So we're getting this big buildup. We've got two different parties waiting for him to come off. And we see that the earlier aura of the old man was just around his body, a little yellow thing. But now we don't even see Chamber, but M-Plate can see his aura. He can see it without even seeing his body. So it's incredible. He says, never in all the time I have been shopping for gene fodder have I seen an aura so deliciously rich.
Yeah. And I love the coloring here.
Yeah.
It's all psychedelic in the background with the aura. And then everybody else is just kind of like faded to black and white. And again, with the lettering with M-plate, like, you know, I just feel he probably has that gravelly, like slimy voice, like, never in all the time I have been shopping for gene fodder.
Come to me, Jonathan Starsmore.
Embrace.
I always wished that comic lettering in this way, where different fonts could be used for different characters and a little more artistic love was spent on it. I think they have gone the other way and in a lot of cases just gone for the cheapest, quickest possible lettering to communicate the story. But this is really Richard Starkings making an art of it. And there's not enough of that in comics anymore.
Totally, totally agree. Because yeah, this is the era, and Chris keeps bringing it up because it's so striking to see the lettering and how they decide to place it, how they decide the fonts that they use, especially at the beginning, the title fonts, which look like Bacallo. I keep saying his name wrong. Bacallo, like, designed font, in my opinion. It looks like it, as if he did it himself. Not sure if that's true or not false, but either way, the letterer hit his style so perfectly.
They might have. There are instances where Comicraft has specifically taken different artists' writing style and turned it into a font. Like there's a J. Scott Campbell one, and there are others too. Cool. So I'm not sure in this case, but they exist.
I love it.
So it looks like Banshee spots who they're looking for.
Yes.
He says, son, Jonathan. And right away, he's already setting up, like, I'm your new daddy now. This is it. You're coming to my school. I'm taking care of you. I'm the paternal one.
Mm-hmm.
But wait till you see your mother. She's got a writing quap.
But this is good. This is good narration. I like Scott's words here. It says, spontaneity, for better or for worse, it's one of the key distinctions of life among the Homo superior. It is impossible to know when even the most normal of situations can change in an instant from the mundane to madness or to murder.
Yum.
Yeah. So like they're not seeing M-plate. They're literally seeing just who they're here to gather off the plane, and everything's casual. They're not in battle mode. And we've got M-plate running up on Jonathan.
Oh, wait. Is M-plate like phasing through the people too? He doesn't have to move around them?
Yes, correct.
I think so.
He's in a different dimension.
But like what does it feel like for M-plate to pass through you? Is it like a ghost feeling where you like, you know, shiver and it's freezing?
Maybe, but I also, he's not in that world. He's just looking.
Okay.
It's a bit complicated. I wish it was.
Comics, you guys.
It's comics. But yeah, so, you know, they could you imagine just walking off a plane and all of a sudden a creature just appears with his hand on you and you'd be like, what the fuck?
Welcome to America, Jonathan Strassmore. Now die.
Oh, and then we get this power effect of M-plate like putting his hand over Jonathan's mouth, which we haven't seen yet because he was wearing this black mask.
Yeah.
And he's got his face over his mouth and he's draining energy, and there's people screaming because now that he's using his power, M-plate is visible to everybody on this reality.
I just like how he goes on for another paragraph. He's like, let me amend that. First, provide me with this genetic stuff of life I need to suck from your bones. Then die. Out freaking rageous. I think that had to be Jubilee.
Yeah. She also says, whoa. And then Banshee immediately is like, save the people, get the girl. And then Jubilee's like, got her, get to screaming. And he's like, exactly what I had in mind. And Banshee lets out his big sonic scream. But I always wonder when Banshee is screaming and talking at the same time, is the sonic scream going like,
I wondered about this moment too. Like, there's no sound effect for his scream, and he's saying a lot of stuff while he's doing it. So there's a little bit of a weirdness there.
I like how in recent comics, Siren used her sonic scream to yell help through Araco, like into Krakoa. Like, it was really fascinating to think using language with the sonic screen to carry across a long distance. Mm. And so when I'm reading this, because due to the awesome lettering, he's saying, I don't know who or what you are, creature, but I'm yelling. Oh, sorry. I don't know who or what you are, creature, but I'm telling you once, release the lad. So I wonder if he's saying release.
Oh yeah, that's totally it. That's totally it.
That would be good.
So before I finished my meal, not likely, Mr. Cassidy, not even a possibility.
And yeah, Sean's like, how do you know who I am? And then we get an over explanation about how he knows everybody, knowledge at a glance. He sees their power, their passion, the past, the present.
Oh my gosh. And I love how he sees all this aura. Like, how fun is that? Just, you know, everything's a disco. It's like you're with Dazzler all the time and she's giving you a concert.
Mm-hmm. And then we learn that M-Plate can absorb the energy that the sonic scream was placed on his body and redirect it. And Sync jumps in to save the day by absorbing all this. I didn't know that Sync could absorb energy like this. I know he can sync with people. So I was like, Bishop?
Well, Bishop, and then also Hellfire Club. Oh my gosh, blanking. Come on, Chandler.
Hellfire Club who? Oh, Sebastian Shaw.
Yes, Sebastian Shaw.
Well, and then Sync himself comments, I didn't know I could do that either, or something to that effect, right? So I don't know. Maybe it's not something he can do very often or reliably.
Hmm. Yep, it just takes him a second to adjust. And then the guy is less than toast.
Yeah, so Jubilee's like ready to shoot some fireworks. Man, she's like, don't. We know that he's going to absorb it. We can't use it. And M-Plate says, I'm impressed. And then we get our chamber moment.
Finally. Finally.
And we.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so we get this sonic. We've seen this bubble before of a psychic, a telepath talking, and it says, "You sincerely want to be impressed? Try this, Pillock."
And what?
He explodes all around M-Plate and basically blows him off so that his hand is no longer on his mouth.
Yeah, he was totally caught off guard because nobody has ever used their power while he was siphoning them.
Mm-hmm.
It's impossible.
He says, nothing is impossible. I'm speaking from experience. If I can learn to adjust to this, and we see what this is, and that's,
oh my God,
the explosion of his chest and upper or lower face. Now, here's your chamber moment. Go, David. All
right. This is what I've been waiting for. This is like a big reveal moment, you know, both in the story, but also it's a chance for Mr. Bacallo to show off in the design and art department. It looks amazing. It looks so cool. Fantastic visual. Moment I saw this, I was like, wow, this character is so cool. I love him. I want to know everything about this. And boy, is he going to be a big deal in X-Men going forward, right? But, you know, this is the one. This is the one where I'm like, how is this not a major player in X-Men today? Talk about a cool and unique visual. Anyway, yeah, love him. Would love to draw him sometime. They should put him on the main X-Men team.
Make a Marvel legend of him.
That would be actually a logistical nightmare for them, because they would have to create a big plastic core that interrupts the rest of the figure, you know, like,
I know, how would the head turn? I don't know where it would pivot or anything like that. Yeah, and
the head probably couldn't move at all, but I don't know.
Well, anyway, so yeah, as David said, we get this awesome look. And so basically he's wearing black pants and his jacket, but he's got all of these bandages dripping from him because his chest has exploded. And if you guys are listening and you've never seen Chamber before, you have to Google him, because it's so hard to explain his look, because it's so unique. It's so specifically to this. Like, go look up Chamber if you don't know what he looks like.
Is this fire? Is it magma? What?
It's sonic energy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't mind my own business like Dina. She told us. She knows what's up.
It's manifesting like fire, because I think he can do it. He can change the color of it too.
Oh yeah.
But I think he's just red hot angry right now because of this dude trying to kill him. So it comes off like this.
That's kind of cool that he can like customize the color though, because then he can be like, all right, well, let's see. This magenta matches my outfit today. So
yeah, because it was blue earlier on the plane. Yeah. So you know. I guess, or the colorist can change the color. It's in the power of the art.
And you know, M-Plate is just totally taken aback. He's like, whoa, again, indeed. Over the years, I've enjoyed many different types of mutations, but never have I been such a guest at such a veritable smorgasbord of designer genes. I am honored. It's like he's going to the Met Gala.
But what I like about this, well, first of all, we also see his creepy hand.
Oh my God, what is going on with that hand?
It reminds me of the Star Wars pit, the sand pit.
That it's in his hand.
It's in his hand.
It's like, high five. No, please don't. No.
It's very Morbius, I think.
Yeah.
It makes, if he wasn't already vampiric enough, this is like even more so.
Absolutely. And but what I love about the dialogue is that it places you in a reality where he's not like an extraterrestrial. He's not somebody who's speaking in like a Thor language. He's speaking like in this almost high society in a way. You know, like it's really fascinating when we got to this part, because I was like, oh, he's not like a monster. He's a person that just looks like this. And, you know, because the monsters would not talk like this at all. They would just say, how dare you interrupt my meal, whatever. You know, they wouldn't say smorgasbord.
Smorgasbord, designer jeans. Like, I don't know. I think him and Jumbo Carnation would meet each other at an event and they'd be seated at the same table. And then all of a sudden, like, oh, I guess I'll talk to you. Mm-hmm. And then they really hit it off.
Yes. They become besties.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, we haven't seen M-Plate on Krakoa, unfortunately. I would actually be very curious to know what's going on with him, but we'll save that for another time.
But his hand.
And so all of a sudden, he's reaching for Chamber again, but then there's a big wham from above and he's slammed into the ground. He's like, oh, I actually felt that. And we know from above, from before, that it's M. And she says, it was pain, M-Plate. Get used to it. And this is the first time we hear M-Plate.
Oh, really?
So M, Monet knows him. You know, we know this from Gateway, because she's like, oh, it's him. But like, this is like, okay, so Monet knows who this dude is.
Yeah.
But he doesn't know who she is. He says, you have me at a disadvantage.
I don't even know you.
I don't know. Why are you hitting me? Which is fascinating, because he literally said, 2 pages ago, I see your past, I see your present, I see your powers, I know everybody, but why it doesn't work on her, he can't see that, which is pretty fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I'm for some reason unable to discern your identity, your name. And then we see Gateway has teleported in Husk, Skin, Emma Frost, and Monet. And Husk is ready to prove herself. She's going to go right after the bad guy.
Oh,
she's like, I'm
no stopping.
A+ student. Let me go for it. And then
Husk.
Yes.
And then Husk. How charmingly appropriate. And then, you know, you see the shadowy claw being raised. And then Sean's just like, Paige.
Yes, because he literally just got over the trauma of losing Blink.
Oh yeah,
like that literally happened not too long ago, and it was all right in front of his face and he couldn't save her. So
oh my gosh, like, he can't lose another one just so soon.
Now when you're yelling like this and you're Banshee, why isn't your sonic scream coming out? Like if I was screaming Paige, you would think like something would like fly out of his mouth. That's why the sonic scream always is the weirdest power to me. I don't get it.
Yeah.
I guess Banshee also stood helplessly as his teammate Thunderbird was killed.
Yes, that too.
So he has a history of seeing people he cares about perish.
Yes, of course, in the plane. Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh, and guess what? M-Plate is pretty vicious.
Yes.
Script.
Right, and
just like claws right through Paige.
I know, and she grasps her belly like almost like she's holding in her innards and she collapses. And I love the art, the frame by frame of her crouched over, and then you see her fall through the frame, and then we see from above that she's on the floor and she's bleeding out. But Jubilee has an idea.
Oh yeah, she runs over there and she grabs her, but then she starts grabbing her skin and she rips her skin off. Rip, 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 rip.
It's a good callback. Brings it full circle.
Oh yep.
My God.
There you go. Hey, Seed, a new bot underneath. And for the record, that was a one-time offer.
And then I love how she calls him Snuffleupagus.
So what's the gig, Snuffleupagus? Oh my God, he does look like Snuffleupagus. Simply does. You were totally buff, then you would try to ambush Sparky here. But why do I doubt you're ready to mix it up with the rest of us combined? Yeah, and now we get the team shot.
Yeah.
You know, where they're all lined up and they're looking badass and ready to rumble.
Yes. And we basically, they're like trying to hold back. M is like, don't taunt him. If he wanted to, he could. But then she's interrupted because he says, shh, child. He's like, don't spoil the fun. And he basically gives his last like dialogue of like, hey, I'm the villain and I'm going to come for you and I can see you and you'll never see me coming and you will never sleep at night. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
As he floats away on a bubble. Issue? Of course.
I just imagine him like Glinda in a bubble floating away going goodbye after I hit the rat.
And then, but we see Monet. She says, wait, we can stop him from disappear. And she's like, what? I can't move. Again, she knows this guy intimately. She knows how to stop his power. Like, this is like intimate knowledge about this guy. So she goes, what has happened?
I happened. We nearly lost Husk to her hot-headedness, M. I wanted to prevent an encore performance. So I telepathically commandeered your thoughts for an instant.
Don't ever enter my mind again.
Ever.
You know the finger went up.
Oh,
the
yeah.
finger wag was happening.
Yeah. I would have been snapping my fingers in the back like, mm-hmm, yeah, get that. Like, ooh, she was pissed, Monet.
Are we clear on this? Is what Monet says. So anyways, we see that none of the people around them are worried. And yeah, they're like, they why are these people anything. Not staring at us? We've got a, you know, chest barrel person exploded.
It's cops and firemen too.
Yeah. But Emma is keeping everybody hidden telepathically. And then Jubilee welcomes Chamber to Generation X.
So Jonathan, welcome to Generation X.
Yay.
Yep.
And then we kind of get into our epilogue. That was kind of the big A story. And now we're getting into the epilogue of way away.
And we see DOA and he's got a ring of keys.
Yes. And he's opening up this kind of jail cell because Emplay needs to feed again because the battle took it out of him.
And, you know, I just got to say, Emplay just reminds me of Mad Max Fury Road or Dune or just a creature from this, like, otherworldly sci-fi film.
He has such a weird design. It's it's very, very Chris Bacalo. It makes me think of what's the four-armed guy, Sugar Man from Age of Apocalypse. He goes for those very outlandish, unique, you know, just weird designs. Sometimes I really love him. I kind of like Emplate. I'm not so sure about the giant hose or whatever. I don't know if I can like connect with him and understand who he is because you don't really see his face as much, but he definitely looks cool.
Mm-hmm. Well, when they go into this cell, they realize that she's gone. The chains have been broken. They're all over the floor.
Yes. What am I to do without her?
Don't worry. We'll find your meal ticket, sir.
And we see a big lightning bolt come down.
Krakoo.
Yes, and they're at a lighthouse, we see. And then we turn the page, and at that very same lightning bolt goes kraka, whatever. No, it goes thaboom.
Thaboom. Right next to the X-Mansion.
Yes. So it makes me wonder, they say it's far, far away, the lighthouse, the lightning. Is it just coincidental that
there's another lightning
storm in both places? Maybe. Possible.
Is that a cigarette, dude? I'm so impressed. Oh my God, Jubilee and the lettering and this bubble. I know,
it's drippy.
I honestly, it's I could dripping. Make that a poster. I could. Like, love it. Dripping sarcasm.
I have a list of people I try to impress, Chica, and surprise, surprise, you're nowhere on it. Like, they're so good. I love the dialogue.
All the sass. It's so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So on the second floor above them, it's Emma Frost, and she has some, you know, wine in her hand. It looks like a Chardonnay.
Yes.
Lighten up, Sean. In case you didn't notice, we won.
And he says he wish he could share the enthusiasm, but he doesn't know what they're up against. M play, you don't know. And then all of a sudden at the doorway,
opens the door.
We get the spooky looking chamber with his now blue looking fire.
Oh yeah.
Excuse the intrusion, but I believe there is someone here to see you.
Oh, who is it?
Oh, it's Gateway. So they all go out to the front lawn, and Sean's just like, Gateway, you can't just be coming and going and interrupting everything. Like, please.
Like, aren't you cold? It's the middle of fall. There's leaves falling everywhere.
Mm-hmm. He says, if you have something to say, man, just say it. And then suddenly he says it.
Right.
He says, penance. I thought he was saying, like, when I first, because I do this on Smart Panel, you know, we're on Marvel Unlimited, so you only see panel by panel. Yes. And I thought he had to go pee. It was penance. He spoke. He actually spoke.
No, he's wilded out by it.
I don't think he meant it as a verb, Sean. It seems to be he was referring
to her, and then we get another
for a dramatic effect.
Yes, a surprise. Nature's way of saying I'm still in control. You never know what's going to happen next. Try again tomorrow.
And who is it laying on that floor right there in front of us?
It's Penance.
Penance.
Yes, we get the red diamond skinned strapped up Penance.
Yeah, and she's a mess. She's passed out. Something happened to her. She
got her, right? Like, this is not a complete surprise to anybody, right? Or does she not appear until the second?
She is not on the cover, no.
Oh, okay.
She's on the cover of the second issue.
Okay.
Next, more on the mystery of Penance. Jubilee confronts Gateway. M investigates M plate and skin and husk play. Scrabble. Honest. And honest is spelled out in Scrabble
letters. Yes. That's so good. Comic craft schooling everybody.
That's the issue. Yay.
So David, what was your absolute favorite part of the issue?
Chamber showing up, just looking awesome. Like, that reveal both in the story and the revelation of the art at the same time is hard to beat. But really, you know, we mentioned before, each of the characters that shows up gets a moment to shine. This is really just a showcase of a bunch of cool new characters, and it's very inviting. You know, I definitely, after rereading this, I want to go pick up the omnibus or something and reread the first 10 issues and remember what this was all about and what their connection was and what happens to Monet. I can't even remember, but I remember it was good. I enjoyed it at the time.
Oh yeah, I love the part with Jubilee's dialogue. I'm so impressed, dripping.
Right.
I need more of that in our lives. Like, let's bring it into today, please.
Yeah, I miss that Jubilee.
Yeah.
I feel like she jumps in occasionally, like with those kind of quips, but she was so refreshing and very of the era of that 90s slacker, you know, skateboarder girl, like vibe. And yeah, we don't get that anymore. Now she's just very focused on being a mom, and she kind of lost that edge in her character.
Yeah, she evolved.
I know. I mean, not to say that I still act like a teenager when I was like in the 90s, but I kind of do.
Yeah, you do.
I don't see any reason why she couldn't be written like this now. She could still be sassy and cynical and sarcastic, however you want to do it. This could absolutely still be her voice now.
I wonder if she doesn't want her child to be sassy though, in teaching her child the sassiness.
Like, well, now her child's a dragon, so I don't think she has much to worry about.
What was your favorite part?
Oh my gosh, I, you know, it's so funny. everything. It's so stupid to say that, but I love the issue, and to reread it now, this is like the third time I've read it in the past day, just to kind of prep for this podcast and do it. It's just it almost every page is perfect. Like there is no filler. Everything is so perfect, and I love this issue. And I can't believe it took so long for us to get to it. But I know. I'm so glad we did it.
I'm so glad you chose this issue, David. It's stellar.
Thank you. I know I was especially intrigued when you offered up this issue. I was like, yeah, that was a great book. I would love to revisit that and talk about it in depth. And sure enough, you know, we got to do it. It was great. Thank you, guys.
Absolutely. So where can people find you and see your art online?
I'm so easy to find at my own name, you know, David at David Nakayama on all the socials. And we have a brand new davidnakayama.com, which is now a storefront for people to get my exclusive comics signed. That's sort of the whole point of it.
Chandler is aghast. His mouth is agape.
I'm like,
he's ready for this. It's like, all right, we got to hang up with David right now so I can go there and get everything.
I still need magic. And yeah, so there's a few that I need to pick up for sure.
I spent last weekend in Texas at the Unknown Comics headquarters signing, I think, about 6,000 to 8,000 comics. So most of that destined to be the inventory of the store.
Wow. Well, awesome. That's so cool. What's your go-to comic book store on the island?
There's an awesome comic shop here called Other Realms. And we recently did a store signing when Gwenverse 1 came out, and I'll be there for Free Comic Book Day. But it's a beautiful store right next to the Best Buy over here. If you're ever in Honolulu, come check out my favorite store on the island.
Perfect.
Yes,
I love it. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. We so appreciate it.
Oh, it was great fun, guys. I where else could I get to talk in depth about some of my favorite X comics? Thank you for doing what you do.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you. X Reads is recorded in Los Angeles.
I wasn't ready, Chandler.
All right. X Reads is recorded in Los Angeles.
Our theme music is provided by Hook Sounds.
Please make sure to subscribe to our podcast to be updated when new episodes appear every first and third Wednesday of the month.
Follow us on social media at X Reads Podcast. That's the letter X, R-E-A-D-S, podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
If you like what you hear, why don't you leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or a star rating on Spotify?
Thanks so much for listening.
Bye.